Hello, hello. This is Tinu, and welcome to another Black Girl in Prague podcast, episode number 6 specifically. I'm super psyched to be recording this episode with my guest and friend, Andrew Power, because Andrew had a little something to do with me kicking off this podcast project initially. When I started the series in January, the vision was to talk to people that have interesting stories to share about their lives and their interests, their time in Prague, the Czech Republic, and pretty much whatever came organically out of those conversations. And conversation, talking, particularly being open and sharing and caring, are how my partnership / friendship with Andrew started last fall. We would meet every 2 weeks or so to talk and brainstorm about our individual projects. And one day I brought up the idea of the podcast. And he said, yeah, go for it. Sounds cool. You've got my support. But, you know, how many things have you told people you wanted to do but then have, you know, never quite get to doing? So Andrew ended up being my accountability buddy. You know, whenever we'd meet, he'd ask, so how are you doing with the podcast? Have you started recording the podcast? When are you going to start a podcast? And, you know, I would hem and awe and, oh, talk about procrastination. Oh, I'm not there yet. I'm too busy. Who's going to listen? Blah, 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 blah. And, you know, he was very patient and we would talk things out about what was keeping me from starting this project. And eventually I started to move in the direction of getting things done for the series to take off. And, I mean, Andrew even taught me how to use GarageBand to get that first episode going. So really, he's been instrumental in more than one way to this podcast series, to the inception of it. And I'm so thankful for his support and thrilled that he agreed to be on this interview with me, or, you know, to have this chat with me. So, as you'll hear, Andrew is a guy with a lot going on. He's a business coach, presentation coach, English teacher, and musician. And I think he's worth listening to about how he's done so well to keep his various interests and projects, professional and creative, going so smoothly. Hello, this is Tinu, and on the podcast with me today is Drew Power. He is a friend, a musician, a business coach, and my GTD buddy.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So welcome, Andrew, or yeah. Drew. Yeah. I call you Andrew, but you prefer to go by Drew, actually.
Yeah, my alter ego, yeah.
Your alter ego.
Yeah,
right.
As a budding rock star.
I stand corrected. Rock star. Yeah, thank you for being on the podcast today.
Mm-hmm, my pleasure.
Okay, so a little bit of context for people. So I met you a year ago.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
At a Creative Coffee event, and you gave a presentation to the group about productivity, about GTD, getting things done.
Mm-hmm.
If people are sort of not familiar with this, this is the product time management or productivity concept created by David Allen, world-renowned concept and I guess a speaker. So you gave this presentation. I needed some help. in terms of my productivity or time management. And I followed up with you, and we started this bi-weekly or bi-monthly?
It's both, isn't it?
It's both, isn't it? Yeah. So we met up every 2 weeks or so.
Mm-hmm.
You introduced me, gave me a formal introduction to the GTD process. And, you know, we started off talking about productivity, time management, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. And our conversations actually blossomed mm-hmm. into other areas, you know, about creativity, about our life or lives in Prague, the things that we're working on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have to give you a really big shout out here and to let people know that you sort of pushed me, our conversations, you know, pushed me into starting this podcast.
can you blush on microphones? That's very nice to hear. Thank you.
our time together was really, motivated me and got me really into the groove to get this going. So mm-hmm. I am so pleased that you are on my podcast as a guest number 6.
Mm-hmm. No, it's great. No,
yeah.
I always tune in.
Yeah, thank you. We actually have quite a bit to talk about. There's the GTD or the professional side of you, and then there's the creative, which you go by the name Trey Rock as. That's the alter ego.
Yeah, when I was solo, I was just using that as a handle.
Uh-huh.
I was a bit embarrassed about people calling me Trey. So now I've got a drummer, so we're a two-piece kind of White Stripes set up. And that's the band. So,
okay.
I'm Drew.
Now you're Drew.
Yeah, it's good to be Drew again.
Oh, cool. Okay, so, let's actually talk a bit about that because, talking about alter egos and personas, and you have lived in Prague for how long have you been in Prague?
Actually? 8 years.
8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And have you always had sort of these dual personas in Prague over this 8 years?
No, for a while I was playing as Drew Power.
Okay.
I had a residency at Tulip, which is now quite defunct. But that really helped me get my chops together, playing mm-hmm. solo. And then I wrote a novel under that name, and I've always kept my business because I'm coaching and teaching, so I always kept that under Andrew Power, so I could on the internet everyone can discover you. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to confuse the two brands, really, the two streams of what I do. Mm-hmm. And then the Trey Rock, I actually really like puns. It's one of my weaknesses. So
you like what?
Puns? Yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah. Right.
So Trey Rock began as a pun, with Trey as in the French for very rock. And the rock is spelled R-O-Q-U-E, which is baroque.
Right.
So, I think it's funny. Probably no one else does, but that's a pun, isn't it? It's a definition of a pun.
How have you managed keeping the two personas going?
In what respect?
When you meet people for the first time,
mm-hmm.
who are you?
Depends where I am, doesn't it?
Okay.
So if it's obviously business, I'm Andrew Power. I've got business cards with all that stuff on. Right. That's my website, andrewpower.biz. And then when it comes to the music, it's Drew Power. And if you look at the website there, it's treyrock.com. That's quite a distinctly different thing. It's quite obviously music.
Let's tackle Drew Power,
mm-hmm.
the business or the professional person.
Uh-huh. Andrew
first.
Power, yeah.
Andrew Power.
Mm-hmm.
See, I can't keep up with all your personas.
I don't think it's quite as unusual as it used to be because we develop internet personalities. Like, you're Black Girl in Prague to some people,
right.
Aren't you? You're not TV.
Right.
So,
no.
So I think we're all a lot more comfortable with those, like people have got crazy names like, R2D2 / 47, that's their handle or something.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't feel it's that unique anymore.
So as Andrew Power, you do business coaching, presentation coaching,
mm-hmm.
and, you work with executive level people or, middle managers and things of that sort. Do you bring in the GTD concept, the productivity, concept into the work you do with these people?
I'm totally customer focused. I know that's a cheesy thing to say, but what that means is whatever they ask for or appear to need, then I give them it. If they mm-hmm. if they're not interested in those things, then I don't, because you can't push people, can you? They have to want to be looking for something, and you're there to fulfill it. So part of my business is teaching business English, and through that, the soft skills for them to actually, do their job.
Mm-hmm.
If people are interested in GTD, I bring it on. Yeah. And okay. I find out, how I can help them.
Yeah.
Per, case to case.
First of all, how did you even get into GTD?
Good question. I've always been, you know, I've just felt like I can always do more. And I've always been interested in finding ways to make it easier, you know, to do more. Mm-hmm. Particularly seeing as I've always had quite full-time things to do outside of work, like writing, you know, music and things. So let's see. I think, yeah, so I was combing the internet a lot for stuff, materials for coaching and for my English classes. And his name kept popping up with the GTD thing. So I listened to the podcast for a while, looked at what was online, and winged it for a bit without buying the book, as you do. Well, that's why it's out there, you know, isn't it? That's why the marketing is there. And right. You want to test things. And I'd looked at that guy. Who's the other guy, the old-fashioned guru who does time management guru?
Franklin Covey? Or
Yeah. Okay. And, I read that, and it was so stale.
Okay.
And a bit bonkers at points. You know, he's talking about doing time management meetings with his children, and I'm like, oh, my God. It's actually in the book. So, but that stuff, I'd tried that, you know, over the years. And you sort of fall off the wagon too easily with it because it's too much like imposing something on what you do as opposed to finding out what you do and then working with that, which is, so GTD is, I think the fundamental difference is it's task management rather than time management. So, and he breaks it down. And once I got the book and I was looking at, you know, these like basically operating a bit like a computer, yes, no, kind of doing 2 minutes kind of thing. If I can do it in 2 minutes, do it. If not, you know, shelve it using that, you know, that simple system. And it's so adaptable. And anyhow, reading the book was really exciting. And obviously anything I learn, I want to communicate to other people.
You know, with GTD being, it seems regimented. You know, step one, or you don't. You disagree. You're about to disagree.
can mean a number of things, can't it?
I mean, considering that the steps involved, you have your inbox where you dump out all your to-dos and whatnot, and then okay, is this something that needs action now? Is this something for some day later? Is this reference or is this tickler? Blah 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 blah. You know, how does that actually, I'm curious actually, because I feel as though this is, it seems like a left brain type of activity to do. It's quite rational or seems, you know, logical. And then there is the right brain, which is, you know, the part that is credited for our creativity and, you know, I guess spontaneity or what, however you want to call it. And, what kind of impact is using GTD had on your sort of creative life or your artistic life? You know, because there's this impression of, I'm an artist, I'm just inspired. You know, I do things, you know, spontaneously, informally, you know, whenever the mood strikes me. I don't want to sit down and plan.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of things in that question.
Oh, God.
Okay, all right, so how does it affect my productivity as an artist? Because actually,
yeah,
that's
or,
the question,
or maybe your
isn't it?
Creativity, actually.
Well, what it does is one of the biggest benefits of using GTD constantly is it frees up your brain for creative thinking. So some people it's problem solving, some people it's, you know, it could be an artistic activity. That free, you know, like, prior to this, I've actually done a great deal of training and practice as a creative person, which is an entirely different field. So GTD, though, is an excellent tool to help me make the most of that creative opportunities when they come up. So I'm always writing lyrics. I'm always, you know, humming into my iPod, you know, getting things down, you know, on audio. And I just build up a massive database. What's interesting, though, I very rarely go back to that. What happens is I'll sit down and I've got some space. I've given myself some space to be creative. And I'll pick out a thread of something, you know, so it could be a lyric. Usually I start with a melody And then from that start, it's like pulling the wool on a jumper, you know, till the whole jumper's gone, except it's
gone, yeah.
Yeah, it's creative. So maybe it's not the best analogy, but or maybe it's like, actually, this is how I really see it. It's right for me, writing a song is like creating a problem and then solving it. Mm. And there's a suspension of actual, you know, what we think of as rational thought in actually moving from one section to the next. Say I'll come up with a verse. So I can usually identify what chords I want from the melody. Then I can start playing with the chords, because you don't always have to play the things that are mm-hmm. naturally implied. So you can be, mm-hmm. I am actually more harmonically creative than a lot of music. Because I do have a lot of theory. I studied music and whatnot. So, you know, I don't have to just go for the rock solid chord. I can play with that. And mm-hmm. people, even if they're not musically educated, they can feel it. You know, it's like a different palette of colors, you know, that you're playing with, as opposed to just using primary colors. And the melody, you know, there's a whole relationship with the rhythm and the melody and the chords throughout the verse. And then, well, how do I move from that into the chorus? Do I want to take the chorus in one direction or another? Is it working? And if not, you know, maybe I'll just relax and improvise again. Mm-hmm. And I'm always recording all these ideas, so I don't have to remember it, which means I'm free to think up something entirely new.
Right. And, you know, I think that's one of my best takeaways from GTD, which is this practice or habit of just dumping out everything that's running through my brain so that I can then focus on one thing at a time, as opposed to having different line threads of activities or to-dos interrupting whatever I'm trying to maybe accomplish at a particular time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's, but it's interesting that you have this approach also with music, or in terms of you're walking down the street and something occurs to you, you record it, it's filed away, and you can come back to it some other time, or not have to sort of blindly, I don't know if blindly is the word, because that's talking about sight, but later on, trying to remember, oh, what was that?
Oh, yeah.
You know, that thread or that melody that occurred to me. And that can be quite frustrating.
It's terrible, yeah. In fact, the latest song I wrote is about that moment where you really wish you had a pen in your hand because you've just had a brilliant idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's gone, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard this story. It's about a writer, a poet, and I don't remember her name. And she said something very beautiful about this moment when a new poem is born.
Mm.
And she talked about the process of writing it out as sort of chasing the poem, you know, so that wherever she is, whatever she's doing, a new poem is born, and she just she grabs pen and she just starts writing, and she described the process as sort of chasing this poem, because the poem is passing along and it's saying, either you catch me now, or you know, write me down, or I'm moving on to inspire someone else, or and I wish I could remember the poet or the exact context that, you know, of where I heard it, but it's similar to that, you know, that we, as at least as artistic people or people who are creative or, you know, who are interested in that, not to kind of take it for granted that, you know, these moments of inspiration are just going to come, and then you can always remember if you don't, I'll get home and I'll, you know, try to write that thought or that quirky line or whatever, but it's actually because of the amount of information our brain is dealing with anyway at any given moment, that thought really just it comes and it goes if you don't capture it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even as a kid, I always had a little notebook, you know, was scribbling away in it. And now I've gone digital, you know, in a sense, some way that streamlines things, but when it all when you start getting glitches, it's a bit frustrating.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about going back to pen and paper.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's go a bit more personal into the music. Mm-hmm. And you know, how did you start? You said as a kid you were interested in this. How was that born? You know, were you influenced by your parents' musical tastes, or you know, come from a you know, from a musically inclined family?
My mum and dad met. They were into Northern Soul, which was a big thing in Britain, particularly in the 70s. But in the 60s, there was an alternative to just following the Beatles in Liverpool, and it was people were into Stax, Motown, and it was a Gordon Berry's label and all that kind of thing. So they always have loved soul music. Then my uncles, because my mum was young when she had me, and so my uncles were even younger because she was the eldest, and they had David Bowie records, you know, and were dressed like him on the cover of Aladdin Sane and stuff. And yeah, so, and then there was the Clockwork Orange soundtrack, which was quite bizarre, but when you're 4
what's
years
it called?
The Clockwork Orange soundtrack.
Clockwork Orange, right?
Yeah,
got it.
Yeah, it was a big phenomenon back when I was a nipper, and I'm giving my age away there, obviously. So yes, the so yeah, music was around, you know. Obviously, unlike today, you know, you didn't have such a breadth of stuff, so you sort of move from one little pond of music to the next. You know, people had four or five LPs. Mm-hmm. They play on one of those little suitcase turntables, and so yeah. And then I was always creative though, so I was drawing for years. And I used to do a lot of portraits and comic strips and things like that. You know, I was thinking about being a comic strip artist. You know, obviously that didn't go down well, telling my parents. and then I started writing poetry, as you do when you're 14. And but I sort of quickly clicked onto just writing poems, or what became lyrics, to other people's songs. So certain bands, there'd be a tune in my head, say by a song by The Jam or something, and I'd just write my own lyrics to it with no real purpose. Until you become an adult, a lot of the creativity you have is kind of purposeless, isn't it? You're just doing it because it's got to come out somewhere.
Right.
And you stumble from one thing to the next. So, and I didn't, you know, I just did those and some people liked it, you know. It was like I was the class poet and that kind of thing, what it was worth.
Did that get you girls?
No. Strangely enough, poetry, you know, poetry isn't good for that. I bumped into some bloke and he was looking for a bass player. And it was my 18th birthday was coming up. And so I got this second-hand bass, plugged it in, and that was the epiphany. You know, I just felt that bass note. And it was like, you know, the clouds parted. It's like, and my career as a lawyer was totally ruined from that moment onwards. So I was mucking around in bands for ages. And because I'm creatively quite single-minded, so I was leading bands even when everyone else had been playing for years and I'd only been playing for 2 months. I was practicing like 8 hours a day and really, really worked hard at it. And then gradually started writing tunes. Yeah, you know, just because they were there to be written in a way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, did you have you know, specific artists that inspired you?
Mm-hmm.
That you know.
Mm-hmm. Once again though, just like with the lyrics, I started writing rip-offs just to understand the mechanics. So I wrote some AC/DC rip-offs, and they were just full of humorous lyrics with puns, loads of puns. Well, that's AC/DC anyhow, but these weren't rude puns. These were just like, you know, in jokes with me and my friends. And then the actual first real song I wrote was a very J.J. Cale kind of song. It was sort of jazz blues. It doesn't fit in what I do now at all, actually.
Well, actually, you know what? Speaking about what you do now, we're going to take a very short pause, maybe about a minute or so, a minute and a half. and play a little something of yours called I Said Something and Now I Know. Is that cool?
Yeah, that'd be brilliant.
Okay. All right. So we're going to play a little something off of I Said Something and Now I Know. Here we go. Listened to I Said Something and Now I Know.
Yeah.
What was going on that? I mean, first of all, the title is thought provoking. I Said Something and Now I Know. When you're writing, are you going for a particular effect or is it whatever just comes to you?
Firstly, the title, because one of the lovely things about writing songs is that you can make references to loads of stuff that you love. And I've loved those titles from the old songs, with loads of stuff in brackets.
Yeah.
So it's I Said Something, brackets, and Now I Know, close brackets, that was just, there's no need for it. It was just, gratuitously bracketing. So the tune, I don't know, see, one of the worst things I think you can do while you're being creative is analyze it. I can analyze it when it's all done and I can look at I've got a couple of books full of my songs over the years and look at the patterns, and say, I was influenced by so and so then, and that's one of their chord sequences, for example, or oh yeah, and then I used it in six other songs but in different keys. So that's good fun, but when you're actually creating, it's better just to keep your hands on the wheel and looking at the road,
Okay, you know what? I have a question. I'm going to use this to segue into Prague. Have any of your songs been inspired by your time here in Prague?
Well, yeah, there's a whole Prague. I'm trying not to say the word oeuvre. there's a whole Prague episode, yeah. The songs are like journal entries. So I can see where I was, in a way, because it's also more emotional as well. Obviously lyrics are there, but the whole thing is an emotional experience with a song, I think. And that's the most important thing to create when you write a song, is to create some kind of emotion. It can be sophisticated emotion, it can be a blend of emotions. But lyrics, I had something cute to say about lyrics the other day, and I forgot what it is. I should have written it down. Lyrics are...
That's what we're talking about. Yeah, go ahead.
Lyrics are a luxury. And because people don't fall in love with lyrics, they fall in love with the song first, and then they fall in love with lyrics. And also when you're playing live, you'd be lucky if anyone catches every other word you say.
Really. Right.
So when I go back and look at my stuff, it's actually playing the songs back again. It's like opening up the journal entry.
Mm-hmm. So what would be, I mean, what would you say the mood of your time in Prague has been like? That, you know, if you're looking back on the 8 years through your songs, what is the mood that people would catch from that?
It's changed a lot recently because I'm writing a lot of rock songs. Because I've got the band, you know, it's amazing what just having a drummer can do to putting some oomph into your songwriting process. Because I'm writing stuff knowing he's going to play with it.
But that's not really the question.
Okay.
You know, I think what I'm going for is something a little bit more intimate, if you don't mind, you know, which is, you know, your time in Prague.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've been here 8 years.
Yeah.
And you've written some, you know, some songs have come to you while you're here. Mm-hmm. And they've been inspired either by your life or the city, the goings on, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And would you say there is a mood to the collection from that time from, you know, from Prague?
Yeah, I think they've got a lot more mature, obviously, because, you know, I can't help but mature after a certain age. So it's
soulful, upbeat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, both, because really that's just the form. You know, you can take a slow song and make it upbeat, can't you? And vice versa. But the actual tenor of what they are is quite reflective about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why in some of my publicity I said it's not about love, it's about men and women.
It's about men and women.
And
oh.
That's a much richer territory than simply, you know, boxing yourself off into love, you know, because what's that anyhow? You know, so the whole thing is like a lot of the songs are like an inquiry into those things about relationships between men and women and
Oh, okay. This is gonna get juicy. if I can mine it,
I might have to speak to my lawyer, you know, before I ask the next question.
Relationships. Mm. Okay. So, did you come to Prague for a relationship? Because I ask because this is what happens for many people. Mm. You know, it happened with me. So, I mean, for you, how did you get to come to Prague?
I didn't come for a relationship. I came for a weekend. And I'm still here. It was a bloody good weekend, though, I have to say. Yeah, there was a relationship involved quite quickly. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
From that weekend?
Yeah. It was
yes.
Quite a cinematic ticket.
Yeah, aren't they all?
Beautiful Prague.
So you came for a weekend, and I mean, and you stayed.
Mm.
What has kept you here? Since you know, since that time,
relationships and work, you know, sort of having to grow up a bit and realize that I can't go gallivanting around the globe the way that I tried to before. Because previously I'd lived all over the UK and I did a stint in Spain as well, which is where I was meant to go back to before I landed here.
Uh-huh.
You know, as things have turned out. You know, with the economic situation after 2008, this is one of the best places in Europe to be, isn't it? Certainly better than Spain or the UK.
Yes, that's for sure. Where do you play in Prague? Because I mean, actually, okay, let me back up a bit.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm asking that question for people who are listening, but I know I've been to some of your, you know, some of your performances. But you also have some new venues coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exciting actually. Really exciting.
Yeah.
I'm doing a solo spot at the open mic stage at United Islands, which is on the 25th of this month, June.
Yes.
I'm on at 6:00. And that's a Saturday and it's free. And then we're doing our sort of band launch on the 27th of July at Rock Cafe. That's the one on the Rodney. It's not the Hard Rock Cafe, though.
Okay.
Everybody keeps saying that. It's Rock Cafe. Uh-huh. Emphasis on the rock.
On the rock, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to rename it R-O-Q-U-E Cafe.
No kidding. Yeah, might as well.
So I've got a Facebook page, so people can check me out there. It's under Trey Rock, TreyRoque. Mm-hmm. And the website, I've got MySpace under the same name too, if you want to hear the tunes.
Right.
But we're the tunes on MySpace are kind of polished because I did all that myself. Mm-hmm. The stuff with me and Martin, the drummer, is got a lot more hair on it. You know, it's got that nice crunchy garage band sound. So we're going to be hopefully recording soon. But we've got the show anyhow on the 27th of July. And
at the Rock Cafe.
Yeah.
And you're also going to be at United Islands, mm-hmm. which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'm pleased about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've never actually been to that event before because typically I've never been around in the summertime mm-hmm. here when it's been on. So I'm looking forward to attending this year and to find out what it's about. And of course, I'm going to come catch you. And I mean, do you need me to bring like a, bullhorn or sparklers?
Yeah, that'd be good.
Okay. All right.
I'm not going to say no to promotion.
We'll definitely do that. We'll be out there. I'll be out there to support your debut at United Islands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, thanks. Yeah. No, you've been brilliant. You've been coming to all the shows since I started playing again.
Yeah, most of them. Okay, so you do the business coaching and the presentation or in English speaking, classes, and you also have your rock ambitions. Mm-hmm. Have you found it challenging to to be a musician than say, being a business coach, or a teacher? What have you come up against in trying to further your artistic goals?
It's sad to say this isn't really Music City. I don't know. Hopefully I can, I've misunderstood some things actually. I hope that I'm wrong about that. But so far, it's not felt like one. Ah. I was comparing it even to when I lived in Nottingham. There was just so much more going on in Nottingham. You could just reach out and to someone and say, who's talented to sort out a problem for you, to do photography or video or to play in the band or record. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's the language barrier. My Czech's far from perfect. And it's just not really Music City.
Is it is it for a lack of venues or just the reception to different sounds?
There's plenty of venues, actually. I don't know if there's plenty of people to go in those venues. not so much bands. I think there's quite a few bands kicking about. But mm-hmm. Audience. Because I think that, this part of the world and then further east has never been very good at buying music. The rip-off culture, frankly, has always been very strong, and now that's not helped at all by downloads and mm-hmm. whatnot.
So people are not taking, I don't know if to say people are not taking the music seriously, but that something, maybe when we look at the art, talking about art and value, mm. right, and people maybe are not putting a lot of value on artistic endeavors. So perhaps trying to be a musician is not seen as a serious endeavor. This is, I'm just throwing this out there. Maybe you agree with this or not. And when you're dealing with that mindset, trying to be a successful or having your music be lucrative can be a challenge.
Mm. I think that the problem of being here, and this is also true of the likes of Germany and wherever, there are very established tropes of music, and people are happy with that the way it is. So, unlike Britain, which is ridiculously hungry for something new all the time, and the way that Britain churns through artists and bands, and something's flavor of the month one week, and then next week it's not because it's too popular, or, you know, it's incredible, which is why that funny little island produces so much high quality music, you know, disproportionately.
But then it seems as though it chews them, you know, chews up its musicians and spits them out. I mean, yeah,
well,
like you just—that's
called the music industry. But here,
they don't even want to bite, right?
There's very established traditions of what rock music should be, you know, like sort of like a suburb of German rock music in a sense. Then there's the traditional stuff, you know, your Carol Gotts and even von Drutschkovers. And then you've got, you know, the country thing, which is, you know, it's sort of the Czech country music scene. And even, actually, I would say that there isn't that much of a scene for dance music, not that I'm an expert or a fan, but even the dance music scene's been given the kibosh, you know, because the problem with playing music late at night, which is kind of absurd. So you're in the capital city, and a lot of bars have to stop playing music at 10 o'clock.
Because of the noise, you know, quality, or not to offend neighbors and things of that sort. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Got it. So, but it's okay to have a dog that yaps all night.
So, I mean, then do you see Prague as your incubator? I mean, just the place for you to come up with or to test out the things that you're doing. And then do you have ambitions to then try to take your work where you're going to find an audience?
Yeah, I've got ambitions to go elsewhere. You know, where there's more action. I don't think Prague is an incubator as such, though. It's just, this is what I've got on my plate and this is what I'm dealing with. I went to San Francisco a couple of years ago, and that's my next city, frankly. I totally fell in love with it, and it's maybe not the music capital of the United States, but it's just kicking. There's just so much stuff, and you can feel it in the street, and it's really, you know, that sort of thing is so refreshing for any kind of artist, I think, to be in an environment where everybody's pushing the creative envelope.
So San Francisco versus New York, you think more so San Francisco that has that push?
Well, I did a stint in London, and I'm kind of done with enormous, you know,
plotted
up cities. So
Okay. All right, so comparing London to New York, you mean now?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm big on friendly places, and I think that I took a road trip around the States, and I did find a different, you know, people were more approachable in California. It is true. So, and you know how it is here at times. So, you know, you just need a total change. And for me, I think that's it. Well, it's a pipe dream, you know, so I've got a lot of practical stuff to do, you know, together. I think a better word is vision. So that's
your
my vision.
Okay.
Yeah. At the same time, the more I work on the band, and doing this band launch is no small task. It's not simply, you know, about learning the songs. I'm just appreciating the enormity of what I have to do, you know, to get even to, you know, the first stage of life as a professional musician, which, you know, is what it's about. So, and then saddled with doing it in a country where, you know, you're not speaking your native language. However, I feel totally up to it. And I think I'm pretty realistic about the plan. And let's go back to GTD, is that I use the GTD thing all the time to create my plans. I do a lot of brainstorming using mind maps. And I combined that with the GTD to make things reality. Whereas when I was a kid, I was good at mind maps, but I wasn't very good at taking them out and making action plans from them. So that's one reason I feel at this time in my life, you know, I'm perfectly placed to go out and accomplish what I want to do.
Okay. So let's say then that pipe dream is now, like you said, it's a vision, and it's, you know, things are happening to elevate it to something that's doable, and that you can feel close at hand. What is success for you? I mean, if we can talk a little bit about the vision, maybe not the not, you know, the specific details of it, but you know, what is success for you in what you're doing?
Ooh, and we've only got 15 minutes to answer that. Okay.
You know, is it 5-star hotels or, you know, hordes of screaming women?
I don't like posh hotels. I don't like posh anything, actually. I had a spell going to the Savoy restaurant here, which is posh as far as I'm concerned, you know, and I was thinking, you know, the food is pretty good, but I don't like being surrounded by people in monkey suits, you know, waiting on my every whim. If it makes me feel uncomfortable, you know, so I like sort of things that are a bit medium rough. Anyhow, sorry, I digress. But being
Okay,
creative,
so
you know, and actually finding an audience, and actually, you know, having my music out there, and being able to make a comfortable living, and comfortable enough to be generous to the people I love, you know, people that. Who need a helping hand and stuff in my life, you know. And you know, to have enough money to buy the music and the books and the movies that I want, you know, just to keep growing, to keep learning something. And there's so much exciting stuff out there. And it comes a point where it's true that money just becomes a wall, you know, that sort of holds you back from actually fulfilling certain parts of yourself. So I, you know, I think that compared to some people, perhaps that's modest, but I'm not that greedy, you know.
Right.
Are you listening, Mom? I'm a good boy. So,
mean, money's a tool to help you live the type of life that you want. And I think it's very important. It's something that I've thought about in the past year or so, because I think it's we can be so quick sometimes, our society, and just to say, oh, I want to be wealthy, I want to have tons of money. But you know, what does that really mean? And you know, if we don't have a clear idea of what that means, if either it's a dollar amount or it's a type of life, then we go chasing opportunities just for money that may not actually be right for us. You know,
Ask
and I
any
mean,
lawyer.
say did I say that again?
Ask any lawyer.
Ask any lawyer.
I know lots of unhappy lawyers, you know.
Right. And you know, I think it's great that at least a little bit of what you've shared, which is you for your success is you are doing what you want, it's paying you, or you know, bringing in enough income for you to live the life you want, which is to either, you know, learn more, to read books, to be able to provide for your family in a certain way. And you know that it's not necessarily to go stay at 5-star hotels. You know, that is not it for you. And I mean, to be at that level of 5-star hotels and, you know, first class or private jets, that require, you know, that's also a very specific goal. I'm not saying, actually, you know, I'm not saying that's a there's something wrong with that goal or vision if that's what someone has. But it's better to be clear about that vision and then know what you have to do to get there. You know, and you know, again, back to Michael Neal. I really like this. I really like this guy. If anyone wants to know who he is, geniuscatalyst.com is his website.
How do you spell Neil? Is it
Neal,
NEAL?
NEILL. Michael Neal, and his website is geniuscatalyst.com. He's a life coach, and he had this exercise once, because he has this online radio show, and he said, come up with three numbers, three figures, three salary or income or whatever. One is what you need to just maintain the life you have right now, and then the second is to take it a notch higher, you know, raise it a notch, and imagine, okay, you want to go on how many trips a year, you know, have what kind of apartment, one, you know, what income do you need to get to that? And the third is, you know, what is your dream income or whatever. But the catch with this exercise was, he said, you have to itemize what your expenses are. you know.
I'm so anal. I really, you give me this. I remember you gave me this, and I loved itemizing everything. It's
Shopping
for yachts.
When I did this exercise, you know, the funny thing was when I did this exercise, I could barely come up with, say, you know, with enough to say I wanted to earn, say, I don't know, $5 million a year.
Uh-huh.
You know, and for the first time, I realized, I'm like, I don't need to earn $5 million. You know, so it's no longer really a goal for me in that sense. I mean, I'm not saying I don't want to be wealthy, but it was a useful exercise for me because to the limit that I could think about the sort of expenses I wanted, my requirements for what I would want to earn a year are actually reasonable,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that can take the pressure off. I think it's a good exercise that could take pressure off a lot of people to say, you know, what am I chasing after?
Mm.
What sort of life do I want?
I agree.
You know, but anyway, we're getting off the topic completely, which was, you know, what is success for you? And
well, no, it's not. It's related because I looked at that and I did the exercise not 100% because I got to stage three and I thought, well, actually, I'd like to make movies. So that's a great hole to put your money into, isn't it? You know,
yes, yes.
Into the movie industry. So
you will need the seven figure income to do that.
But I put it in my diary that if everything goes according to my plan, then I'll get a reminder in a couple of years about reevaluating that. So I'm trying to automate those kind of things. Once again, the GTD thing, making things real and forgetting about them.
Yeah.
And then you find yourself somewhere, you know, I don't know if you do this, but I actually do a review at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And I look at my personal life, finances, creativity, mm-hmm. etc. And it's funny, I also look at the one I did the year before after I've done the new plan. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting how you're so close to so many things that you mm-hmm. set your mind on a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it won't exactly be the same thing.
Right.
But it'll be something perhaps you didn't imagine, but fulfilled the thing that you wanted.
Yes.
So I'm a big fan of that too.
Yeah, yeah. Agreed. I mean, I'm not quite as meticulous, I would say, but it is interesting sometimes to go at the end of the year to look back at, say, a goal or goals I set at the beginning of the year. I mean, and I'll admit, you know, that some goals I set at the beginning of the year and I completely, you know, almost forget about them halfway through the year. But at the end of the year, I actually realize that I accomplished the particular goal almost without a lot of thought, but maybe that's it in a way. But I mean, I think the beauty of having this process GTD as well, at least having this concept as, you know, as a foundation, is then there is more intent, and one is probably less likely to fall off track with a particular goal.
Mm. You know? And the other thing I would say is that if anyone's serious about it, is to get a GTD buddy, because I think that we've managed to accomplish a lot.
Yeah.
Because I know in 2 weeks I'm going to have to show something to you, and I'm going to, you know. It's like, I'm not going to let you kick my ass for not doing this.
Yeah. Well, you know,
it's that coaching thing, isn't it? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we actually didn't even really talk about how our GTD sessions went, mm-hmm. which was, as you said, you know, we would meet and talk about our goals, what we wanted to accomplish. And the point of the GTD was to hold each other accountable, mm-hmm. but at the same time provide support. You mm-hmm. know, it wasn't that it was mandatory that we had to show up every 2 weeks with, you know, you had to have gotten this task done, because, you know, there are all sorts of things that happen, either, you know, psychological barriers, definitely in my case, you know about this, you know, to getting some things done, and, you know, just life circumstances. But it was good to kind of know that, okay, I'm meeting up with Drew in 2 weeks, and what would I want to have to show for my time since then, you know, since our last meeting.
And also because you're just telling an interested person about it is that you can enjoy the fact that you've accomplished these things.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, it sometimes, particularly with big projects, it's hard to get some instant feedback on your, how successful you are at going through it. And, you know, so coming up to you and saying, oh, well, I've got this new idea and I've done X, Y, and Z, and is excellent, you know.
Yeah, definitely. So when's our next session?
Well, next week I'm out of town, but how about the, and there's the United Islands thing, isn't there?
United Islands, yeah.
So I'll be yodeling at home, you know, getting my pipes into order.
So probably I'll have to, we'll see you.
2 weeks.
We'll see each other in, no, 3 weeks, maybe first week of July, it looks like.
Well, I'll see you at United Islands, but I'll be on
the
stage.
Yes, definitely. We'll, but that's not GTD. That's just, you know, friend supporting a friend and, you know, coming out to enjoy the event. But, you know, Drew, thank you so much for, you know, giving me your time, you know, your hour and talking about what you do. And, you know, just it's been fun. It's been great. And I definitely, you know, look forward to our GTD sessions as always. But, you know, most of all, you know, I just want to wish you, you know, all the best, you know, in what you're doing, you know, creatively, and to make this vision of yourself and in the life you want, and, you know, with your heart, art rather,
both.
Yeah, to, you know, to make it a reality. I think it's great, and you have my support.
Yeah, well, thank you, and you know, keep up with the podcasts because Prague is crying out for them.
Really?
Yeah.
I need to hear them a bit more. Thank you, Drew.
Yeah, my pleasure. Have a nice evening.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Tino again. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the chat between me and Andrew. Please do check out his websites and pop into one of his venues over the summer and become a fan if you're in the Prague area. On my end, it's been great fun to do these first six chats so far, and I'd like to thank all my guests for being so gracious and giving their time and sharing their stories with me. I'm going to take a short break for the summer to relax and recharge. The podcast series will be back in September with some new interviews, and I hope that you'll be back as well to listen and support the program. So I'm going to sign off, not with D minor as I typically do, but with Andrew, and you'll get to listen to all of I Said Something and Now I Know. Have a good summer and ciao.
Yesterday, just when I thought that I got away from the thought police, sliding off my tongue, a casual statement is flung. See its reception, what have I done with my glossary? I said something without meaning, now I know I was wrong. If I wasn't kind, can I rewind? Where'd I come from? If I say it without meaning, can it change my mind? Thank you. drink. I'll wager my wages, I'll say something that's gonna come out strong. Cause those are the ways, chucking at my chip shop days, brought up by handstand and led astray by a wicked man. I said something without